Welcome to the next episode of the Armchair Directors, where I, Alex Baker, look back at one of the cinema's greatest directors and one of their essential films. This week, we're looking back at the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock, and his 1954 classic, Rear Window. Starring James Stewart and Grace Kelly, this film follows a wheelchair-bound photographer who, after spying on one of his neighbors, is convinced he killed his wife. So now, let's spy on Thorwald and discuss Rear Window.
I can smell trouble right here in this apartment. First you smash your leg, then you get to looking out the window, see things you shouldn't see. Trouble.
With me here today to talk about Alfred Hitchcock and Rear Window is the director of film at HCC and the co-architect of Armchair Directors, Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome to the show.
Thanks, glad to be here.
First question we'll start off with is, what was your overall opinion of the film? Because I think this is one of my favorites.
This is one of my favorites, too. I think because, in a way, it's a metaphor for movie watching. You have a man who is in a wheelchair, who is watching what's going on across the courtyard. And he can't move or do anything about what he sees. Much like a person in a movie theater. You're sitting in a chair. You can't do anything about what you see on the screen. You can only react. I think that's a brilliant way to set up something that's sort of interior and exterior at the same time.
Yeah, it's definitely, the word is reflexive. So, though, it's interesting, since we did to Have and Have Not earlier, there's a connection with From Rear Window to that film. So what is that?
That's true. There is a point in the movie where Grace Kelly is talking to Jimmy Stewart about her day, and she references the day spent with Leland and Slim Hayward. Slim is Howard Hawks' ex-wife, and Leland Hayward is a talent agent who sold Hitchcock the Woolrich story on which Rear Window is based.
Interesting. So definitely this is one of the big themes of the film, I think, is voyeurism, because it makes us feel, as we're watching all the characters, it makes us feel like we're peeping Toms along with James Stewart.
And that was one of Hitchcock's motifs. He liked to peek into windows and open movies or scenes by showing a window and then kind of flying inside so you could see what's going on behind the scenes or in the other house or whoever it is he's spying on.
And so I think the film also kind of gives you a sense of claustrophobia because it never really leaves that neighborhood. We never go in the outside world, so to speak.
Well, you know, interestingly, the set is completely takes place in a studio. And when Hitchcock wanted to make Rear Window, he took a look at the soundstage, and it wasn't large enough, so they actually cut the floor out. Jimmy Stewart's second floor, looks like a second floor apartment, is actually on the ground floor of the studio, and everything that's lower is in the basement. And everything at the top is right up there at the grid, so everybody acting in the topmost part of that environment was roasting because the lights back then were just very hot. We didn't have the same lenses or any of the things, technology that we have today. But it was a really good way to keep complete control over all the environment, the way the lighting looked. They had lighting set for daytime and nighttime and afternoon. So when it came time to switch times, they just hit a switch and then all the lights changed at once.
And so going back to the sense of on the soundstage and claustrophobia, it almost feels like this film could really work as like a stage production on a play.
It does, except that it's more like Hitchcock created a dollhouse and then moved all of his characters around in it. You need to be able to move a little bit to show Jimmy Stewart because the whole movie really gives you his perspective, except for a couple of times when Hitchcock clues you in on things that he doesn't let Jimmy Stewart, the character, know.
And I feel like there's a lot, like when you're looking at all the characters in the film, it has a lot to, it's like a lot of different like people in different stages of relationships. You have Stewart and Kelly, James Stewart and Grace Kelly kind of at the point in their relationship where like, they're not really sure whether they want to go to that next stage. And then you have Thorwald and his wife who are not in a very bad relationship and she's kind of maybe seen as a nagging wife. And then you have the newlywed couple, which I always find funny, is they're in the honeymoon phase and, you know, the curtains are always closed, but you still know what's going on. And then you have the Miss Torso, who's sort of this independent woman. She sees a lot of men, hasn't met her house. And then you have the Miss Lonely Hearts and the middle-aged piano player, who are kind of these lonely middle-aged people who may not have found the romance in their life yet.
Well, what you touch on is what I think is the beauty and the magic of Rear Window, in that what Jimmy Stewart is seeing across the courtyard are all of his fears about relationships. He sees the nagging wife, then the henpecked husband, the middle-aged man, all of the characters across the courtyard mirror the clothes that Grace Kelly wears. So Grace Kelly has a green suit. Miss Lonely Hearts has a green dress. You see Grace Kelly in a beautiful black dress. You see Miss Torso in like a black negligee. If you look carefully, Mrs. Thorwald is a dead ringer for Grace Kelly. She's blonde. She has this white nightgown. Later in the film, Grace Kelly will change it into a nightgown, very much like Mrs. Thorwald's. They both have a red purse. Both purses are empty. They both have a bracelet with hearts on it. There's all these little clues that Jimmy Stewart is looking at Grace Kelly and being very ambivalent about where their relationship's going. And across the way, he sees all of these parallel universes of all of his worries about what would happen if he got together permanently with Grace Kelly. And it's mirrored in the clothes. And Hitchcock was famous for detailing every aspect of his film. So when he would send the script to Edith Head, who was a costume designer who won many, many Oscars, he would detail in the script what all the clothes would be like. So you see in later in the movie in Rear Window, Grace Kelly's wearing this flower dress. And when she climbs up the side of the building, she kind of fits in like a trellis. I mean, every single detail about the clothing was decided deliberately.
Interesting you're talking about the green suit that Grace Kelly wore, because I was thinking that automatic seemed very similar to what Kim Novak wore in Vertigo.
That's actually very true, except Grace Kelly's suit was green and Kim Novak's was gray. But same kind of styling.
Yeah, similar style, yeah.
Same costume designer, too. Edith would be Edith Head again.
And she was a really one of, like, when you needed, like, a costume designer, she was, like, the one person to go to, right, during that time?
She was. She was nominated for 35 Academy Awards for costume design.
Wow.
Including every year from 1948 to 1966, and won 8 times. More Oscars than anybody else.
That's got to be a record.
It is.
Wow.
She was also spoofed on The Incredibles as Edna Mode.
I never knew that.
Yeah, if you look at pictures of Edith Head, they modeled Edna Mode after her. Edna Mode meaning, you know, mode meaning fashion in French. So Edna Mode is Edith Head.
That's very interesting. And then talking about James Stewart, like, you know, we kind of, his best known work, I would probably say, is his stuff he's done with Hitchcock, Vertigo, Rear Window, Man Who Knew Too Much, Rope. And so at this time, he was sort of at the height of his career, wasn't he?
He was. He was, though, 21 years older than Grace Kelly. So to be the love interest, he was very concerned about how old he looked. So he had new toupees created and had expert cosmetologists come in to deflect the recognition that he was so much older than Grace Kelly.
You know, that was kind of like the norm in the Hollywood movies, like the man would be a good deal older than the woman. I mean, Grace Kelly, like, she was in High Noon with Gary Cooper. She was also in To Catch a Thief with
Cary Grant.
And she was also in Dialing for Murder with the husband was Ray Milland. So these guys were all probably 2 decades older than her.
That's true. That's true. I think Jimmy Stewart didn't want to look that much older than her, though.
And so in Grace Kelly, and she sort of fits in with the glamorous Hitchcock blondes, as you so to speak, like Kim Novak in Vertigo, like Doris Day and
The Man Who Knew Too Much.
And so it was strange. She did have the short acting career, because I know she married a prince. And then
she married Prince Rainier?
I can't remember the guy's name.
The Prince of Monaco.
But so she was she also like at the height of her career at that time, or was she a relatively unknown actress?
You know, that was a good year for her because she made Rear Window and Dial M for Murder and The Country Girl. And she won the one and only Oscar for The Country Girl. She loved being an actress from all accounts. But once she became the Princess of Monaco, that was her new job. That's really what she did after that.
And it was interesting that when we first see Grace Kelly and there's the slow motion kissing scene when she kisses James Stewart, almost seems like it's like mystical or magical or something. It doesn't seem like, you know, realistic or something.
Well, that's a very interesting scene because he has a broken leg, and I'm sure she didn't weigh very much, but what is up with that? Let me sit on your broken leg. Every time I watch that, I think it's kind of a strange scene to have her sitting on him while he is in a wheelchair with a broken leg. So I think that's part of the reason why it seems so odd. Plus, he's not really interested. Who wouldn't be interested in Grace Kelly?
Yeah.
There's an ongoing subtle joke that goes through that encounter and in other places in that film about her questioning his sexuality or interest in her.
Mm-hmm. And then the villain in the movie was Raymond Burr. And it's interesting because when we usually think of Raymond Burr, you think of his heroic TV roles because he was Perry Mason and he was also Ironsides. But, you know, starting out his career, and especially in this film, he was always the bad guy in movies because I remember watching a few film noirs during the summer at Turner Classic. He was always like the ruthless gangster.
Well, you know, he was modeled on David O. Selznick. Hmm. Hitchcock chose him because he looked like him. With the white curly hair and glasses and the mannerisms, the way he holds the phone. Hitchcock had a love-hate relationship with Selznick. He gave him an American audience. But Selznick also was a control freak, and he wanted to tell Hitchcock what to do and how to do it. And, of course, Alfred Hitchcock didn't want to do that. He didn't want to make movies that way. So they had a sort of a little bit of an antagonistic relationship. So to make David O. Selznick be the villain in Rear Window was a little bit of an inside joke.
And so did Hitchcock regularly, like, have trouble with the people he was working with over his career?
I don't think he had trouble with everybody. He got along famously with Cary Grant. Mm-hmm. He got along very well with Jimmy Stewart. I think most of the actors liked working with him because he was very good at making people look good on screen. I think he was very exacting. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the people who worked with him who wanted more control, like Selznick, who wanted to see the rushes every day and edit and make suggestions and have him reshoot things, his personality was just not like Hitchcock's. Selznick was a really type A kind of a person who took speed and all kinds of things to keep himself up at night and worked all the time and expected everybody else to. And Hitchcock was this British gentleman who wanted to do his job and then go home and have a drink with his wife.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like that goes a lot with directors, that they're always feuding with the studio executives. Like, it's very hard to find a film where the studio executive and the director get along perfectly.
I think that's true.
Yeah. And are there any other roles in the film that stand out? Because I think one of them is a Thelma Ritter as kind of the wisecracking, I guess she's the physical therapist or something, but, you know, she was also in The Lady Eve and a couple of, like, film noirs, I believe.
She has all of the funny lines. Mm-hmm. Now, the Rear Window is based on a short story called It Had to Be Murder by Cornell Woolrich, and that story does not have the Thelma character. It has a sort of a manservant instead who has, you know, the straight man. He plays the straight man to the main character. But Thelma Ritter kind of makes the movie in a way because she gives some impetus to Jimmy Stewart to think about the things that he has said about not wanting to marry Grace Kelly's character or being suspicious about what's going on in the courtyard. Mm-hmm. She's the voice of reason and conscience, which says, mm-hmm. you know, you shouldn't be spying on people.
And then talking about the literary influence, I was looking at Cornell Woolrich's work, and this book was called It Had to Be Murder, which this was based on, but also he had 34 films based off his work, so he was definitely a very high-in-demand author at that time. There was actually, during the Film Noir Festival, I'm not sure if you watched during over the summer at Turner Classic, but there was a film, it was called The Window, and it was also Cornell Woolrich's work, and it was a kid in a hot New York neighborhood, and he witnesses a neighborhood murder, and it's just very much like, and he sees it through the window, but the thing is, he tries telling people about it, but he's kind of like the boy who cried wolf, where he is like an habitual liar, so nobody believes him.
They made a remake of the movie as a TV movie with Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. Christopher Reeve at that time had become paralyzed, so it was an obvious choice to have him play the guy in the chair. It didn't do as well as Rear Window, though.
It wasn't very good. Would you say it's up to that quality or not very good at all?
I think that a lot of people watched it because they liked Christopher Reeve and wanted to see him do a role that suited him now that he'd had this tragic accident. But I don't know that it stood up to just everything that went into Rear Window in terms of the actors and having Alfred Hitchcock direct it. And even the songwriter is an interesting character. Mm-hmm. He's actually famous. He is the guy who did the Chipmunk song. That's his claim to fame. His name is Ross Bagdasarian. He also wrote other songs like Come On to My House, and he was a very well-known songwriter. So he's actually not an unknown.
Hmm. So there, so besides the main characters, are there any other supporting characters in the film that stand out to you?
No.
No. Okay.
I mean, I think there are other characters, obviously, but I think that those are the strong ones: Jimmy Stewart, Grace Kelly, and Thelma Ritter, mm-hmm. and Raymond Burr.
It's interesting. When you really think about Hitchcock in the 50s, one thing you probably think of is the music, because obviously Bernard Herrmann and Hitchcock was that legendary collaboration. But in this film, it was by Franz Waxman, but there really wasn't much music overall, like original music in the film. The music you do hear comes from within the world of the film.
That's true. They layered a lot of background sounds. Every noise effect was orchestrated. Pieces of conversation, foghorns, cars going by, snatches of music heard on the radio, etc. And Bing Crosby's To See You Is To Love You, played on somebody's gramophone, frames the scene with Lisa and Jeff and also the drama playing across the courtyard with Miss Lonely Hearts. Mm-hmm. The song applies to both ladies. And to say, you know, to see you is to love you when you're watching somebody across the courtyard is also a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek mm-hmm. reference to the fact that they are peeping Toms in a sense.
Yes. And then Robert Burks, he was a regular Hitchcock collaborator. I think he's sort of under kind of this unsung hero of the film world because he did all the classic Hitchcock films except for Psycho. He did, and he was nominated an Oscar for this film. So I just think this cinematography in this film was also very well done.
I agree. I think the cinematography is outstanding, and it illustrates Hitchcock's inner world in a way too, because it's the story of a man who lives through his camera. Mm-hmm. And who prefers fantasy to reality, who has a more intense relationship with women seen through his camera than the real woman in his life. It's autobiographical and scathingly self-critical in a way.
Hmm. And so what genre would you say this film does qualify in? I mean, we usually probably would say it's suspense, but some people have come out and say it's film noir-ish. But also sometimes I think it's pretty scary because the part where Thorwald comes in and he's going after him. That part always just scares me because I saw that as a kid. I had nightmares for weeks thinking Thorwald was going to come into my room.
Well, you have to threaten him first, I guess.
Yeah.
I would call it a thriller. Mm-hmm. I think it is suspense, but I think there are some elements that really have you on the edge of your seat waiting to see what happens next.
Yeah. That was the one thing I was thinking of when Thorwald comes and he keeps getting blinded by the flashlight is like, why don't you just cover your eyes?
This yes.
And like, go after himself. He's like, oh, I fell for that again.
Every time.
Yeah. And so where would you rank this among Hitchcock's other films?
I think it's one of his best. I think this movie and Rope and Vertigo are three of his best. Mm-hmm. Ironically, they all have Jimmy Stewart in them, but in very different roles. But this one really suits Jimmy Stewart. That's sort of a gruff character who's cynical mm-hmm. and worldly wise. That's kind of how people like to see Jimmy Stewart, just a regular guy mm-hmm. with a little bit of an edge. That's how mm-hmm. Hitchcock liked to play characters, just ordinary people with ordinary lives, and suddenly something sinister kind of creeps into their world.
Yeah, definitely. When you think of like James Stewart's early films, like You Can't Take It With You and the stuff he did with Capra, he's always kind of this very very cheerful, positive guy, and on the Hitchcock films he's a bit more beaten down, world weary.
Yeah, and I think that helps with the idea that this is a character that Hitchcock relates to and assumes that you and I will relate to as well, whereas with Cary Grant, he wanted to be Cary Grant. He used to say that he would walk around in his mind assuming that he looked like Cary Grant, and when he would catch a glimpse of himself in store windows or whatever, he would always be surprised to see what he really looked like, because in his head Cary Grant was the ultimate.
Okay, so I'll have to put you on the spot here. Who do you think was the better person in the Hitchcock films, Cary Grant or James Stewart?
I have to say my favorite is really Cary Grant. I think Jimmy Stewart is an incredible actor, and I like him in everything I've seen him in, his westerns, It's a Wonderful Life. He's a wonderful actor. But Cary Grant has a little bit more of a darker, like, substrate. Mm-hmm. You can always sort of see him being a little more evil than they let him be in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I always felt like if Cary Grant was just a little bit younger, I thought he could have been the first James Bond.
He would have been a great James Bond.
Yeah. And so was this the first film that kind of addressed this issue of voyeurism?
Well, Hitchcock did that that business of flying inside the window in other movies. He did it as early as Foreign Correspondent, which I think came out in 1948. And he used it again in Psycho. And he used it in a couple of other places, but he had used it before.
Yeah. Actually, just thinking about it, in Rope, the very first shot is us going into the house as
That's
we
right.
hear the guy scream.
That's right, and that was 1948.
Mm-hmm. And also speaking, I believe this was Alfred Hitchcock's second color film, because I know his first one was Rope, but I think after that he went back to black and white and then came back to color with this film.
I think that's correct, but I'm not positive.
Okay. And so contrasting... is black and white films with this color. What really stands out with you as color compared to his black and white films?
Well, some of his black and white films, like Suspicion with Cary Grant, mm-hmm. were shot for black and white. So all the choices that he made were made knowing that he was going to shoot it in black and white. And when Turner Classic Movies came along and colorized it, it makes it more appealing to some viewers because they'd rather watch it in color, but the color is all kind of off because they're adding color where the set designer and cinematographer didn't intend it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't read correctly. It seems overly colored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking on YouTube one time, there was a colorized version of The Big Sleep and it just looked terrible. Like it just doesn't work at all.
It doesn't work at all.
Yeah. And I think Turner Classic stopped doing that, because I know they did that when they first started, but they've kind of stopped doing the colorization of black and white movies, right?
They did. Yeah, mm-hmm. People complained. They wanted it to be, if it was made in black and white, let's watch it in black and white the way it was intended.
Agreed. And so, you know, is Hitchcock the most recognized director of all time? Because even if you talk to people who really maybe not that be that into film, like you'd ask them, who's Alfred Hitchcock? Oh, famous director. Because not only because, you know, of the great films he's done, but also because he appeared in so many films with the cameos. He also had the TV show, The Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which I believe was up there with The Twilight Zone as one of the most popular shows at that time. And you yourself actually teach a class of him at HCC, don't you?
I am. I'm teaching a class this semester in the films of Alfred Hitchcock.
So do you think he's one of the most recognized directors?
I do. I think he's one of the most recognized because of the quality of the films he made, because what he did was groundbreaking for its time, and because he physically was so different looking. He had that very famous profile, and he used it in a lot of places, including his TV show. He had a half-hour show for several years, and then the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. And he would open and close the show with a little intro and then exit, where he would tell a little joke or set up the skit or whatever it was. So people got to know him as well as whatever it was he was putting on, whether it was a movie or a TV show.
The only thing I've always liked about Hitchcock is he always had some good, like, dark humor in all of his films, just because I love Thelma Ritter's character. Just like, oh, the arms in here, the body's in the river. And I was just, you know, he always had that dark humor.
And
I was
like, and then she said, I want no part of it.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the line they gave her. Yeah, he has a lot of great lines. And some of them they're kind of throwaway. If you don't know the reference, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But if you do, it just makes it a little better. There's a scene where a dog is killed, and Grace Kelly's character says, why would anyone want to kill a dog? Is it because it knew too much? Which is referencing Hitchcock's movie, The Man Who Knew Too Much. And it would be remade with Jimmy Stewart, but he had originally made it in the 30s.
Yeah, with Peter Lorre.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so there is a large influence of this film on later films, because I know, I'm not saying this is a very good film, but Disturbia with Shia LaBeouf was in, and then, of course, the remake you mentioned earlier with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. The remake with Shia LaBeouf is, I think, more of a horror film. Mm-hmm. I don't think it succeeds as like a classy suspense thriller the way Hitchcock's Rear Window does.
Yeah, kind of like Rear Window for millennial teens, I would say.
Right, who also want a little bit more guts and gore.
And so last question I have for you is, tell us a little bit about your Alfred Hitchcock class and kind of what you do and, you know, the films you teach and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's so many films to choose from with Alfred Hitchcock, but we start the class each week with an episode from his TV show. Hmm. And I've been choosing episodes that either have actors in it who appear in the movie we're going to see, or if the theme is somehow relevant to the movie that we're going to see. And then we watch a variety of different films in the class from different periods and discuss Alfred Hitchcock's techniques and motifs and all the little in-jokes that are in each of the movies.
So I was curious, what has your students' reaction been to Alfred Hitchcock? I mean, because I know his classic movies have been a while ago. So as a millennial, or as our generation, do they still adore Alfred Hitchcock, or is it maybe like, oh, he's a bit too old for me? Or...
You know, I think his movies really stand up even now. I think they're still surprising. I'm always surprised how people will come into the class and not realize he had a cameo in every movie. So you kind of mentioned that as an aside, and someone will say, oh, he had a cameo in every movie? Not everyone, but to the point where later in his movie career, people started to look for it. Mm-hmm. So he had to find clever ways to get his cameo in there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the older students who don't know that fact, but they will have remembered the TV show from back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And I was curious, has there any been like students, like opinion or something on Hitchcock that's really surprised you over the years when you're teaching this class?
You know, for a long time when I taught the class, I didn't go into, in his later life, how he became obsessed with certain actresses. Mm-hmm. Because certain things hadn't come out, like The Girl on HBO about Tippi Hedren, and the movie Hitchcock with Helen Mirren and Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. That gave me a lot more material to use in class because it's relevant and new and people had seen it recently, or if they hadn't, they wish they had. But it brings up a lot of things about him later in life, about his obsessions with women, and it doesn't make him look as good. Mm-hmm. He had a whole stellar career and then the sort of sleazy thing that happened near the end. And I don't like to bring that up until the very end of the class because it sort of detracts from a whole body of work. But for younger students, they might have seen The Girl or seen the Hitchcock movie first, and then they go backwards.
Last question I have is, for where can listeners find you and talk about the other film classes you teach here at HCC?
Every semester, I teach American cinema online, and I also teach world cinema, which I'm teaching on. I teach Tuesdays, every Tuesday, every semester.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. If you haven't seen Rear Window or any film directed by Hitchcock, what are you waiting for? We encourage you to see it because it's truly one of the best films of all time. Don't forget, you can listen to Armchair Directors every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. and Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Be sure to tune in next week when I will move back to Stanley Kubrick talking about Clockwork Orange with Professor Mary Dutter. Professor Westhaver, thanks for coming onto the show today, and I'm sure we'll see you again.
Thanks very much.
So until next time, for Armchair Directors, I'm Alex Baker saying, what did you do with the body, Thorwald?
Start from the beginning again, Jeff. Tell me everything you saw.